As we know, this week we will be getting to the 33rd day of the Omer, which is traditionally celebrated as Lag BaOmer. And it is a little bit unclear exactly how the celebration of Lag BaOmer developed, how exactly it evolved, and where it emerged from. And that's what I'd like to talk about today. I have found this to be a very interesting topic, only because I knew nothing about it until I looked into it myself. And maybe everybody here looked into it as well, so you might be bored, but I assume not. Much of the history that we're going to talk about today is taken from a Yeshurun journal. Yeshurun is a journal that comes out, I think, once or twice a year. It always has very good articles. So somebody wrote an article about the history and the development of Lag BaOmer and where exactly it came from. That is going to be the first half of this year. Later on in this year, I'd like to talk a little bit about some messages that we can take away from Lag BaOmer. So the story begins as follows. We have a famous Gemara, a well-known story of Chazal in Meseches Yevamos Daf Samach Beis Amud Beis, where the Gemara tells us as follows: Shneim Asar Elav Zugim Talmidim Hayu Lo LeRabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is probably one of the greatest Tanaim. Not one of the greatest, he probably was the greatest Tana. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I named my son that we just had after Rabbi Akiva. I was always taken by the life and legacy of Rabbi Akiva. I think he was, you know, just a towering figure who is responsible for so much, who lived a life never giving up, even though life threw so many challenges at him. He was just such an amazing personality. And Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara tells us here, had Shneim Asar Elef Zugim Talmidim. Try to think about what that means. He had 12,000 pairs of Talmidim, 24,000 students. That's a pretty amazing number. And it says that they were Migivas Ve'ad Antifaras. They were spanning the spectrum of the entire country of Israel. So he was the most influential personality, and his students were all over the place. The Gemara seems to tell us, if you just put a different number of sources together, they're not all in one place, but the Gemara seems to say not only was Rabbi Akiva obviously a very effective teacher of Torah, but the Gemara says also that Rabbi Akiva cared very much about his Talmidim, which I think is so important today. We see sometimes that there's this divide between people who are sometimes intellectually able to give over knowledge and people who are also able to care and be sensitive to the needs of others. And the Gemara tells us, which is another reason why Rabbi Akiva was so influential in his time, it was not only because he had the knowledge and he had the ability to effectively transmit that knowledge, but also because he cared, because he was a leader who cared about his people. So the Gemara says a story about Maisa b'talmid echad mitalmidi Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says, I didn't put it on here, but we're told a story about one of the students of Rabbi Akiva who got sick, and all of the contemporaries of Rabbi Akiva were afraid to visit him because, I don't know if he was contagious, but there was something wrong and they were concerned about visiting him. Nichnas Rabbi Akiva Levakro. Rabbi Akiva says, how can we all ignore this person? How can we leave this person alone? How can we just neglect the fact that he is sick? And therefore Rabbi Akiva goes and he sweeps in front of the bed and he changes the linens, it says, and he makes sure that this person is able to be as in a healthy environment as he can. And the man responds to him and he says, Amar lo Rebbe hechi yisani, because you came to visit me and you were the only one who bothered to sweep and mop the floors and you were the only one who bothered to make sure that my linens are clean, you have revived me. Hechi yisani. Yatzer Rebbe Akiva v'darash. And Rebbe Akiva on that occasion went out from that experience and he said, Kol mi she'enem evakre cholem ki ilu shofech damim. If you can't make time to go and visit someone, it's as if you are responsible for their death. We all know there are sometimes people who are homebound, who are not able to get around, who are depressed, and they sometimes die from that depression. I was at a shiva the other week where somebody told me they believe that their parent passed away because of the depression that set in, because people weren't coming to visit, and people weren't paying enough attention, and they weren't blaming anyone. They were just saying the facts of life are that sometimes we're busy, and sometimes we don't realize how important it is to make sure that people don't feel alone. And Rabbi Akiva taught us this, and I've always thought that that was amazing. Rabbi Akiva, who was a man of such stature, Rabbi Akiva, who was a man who understood what it meant to live every moment of life, teaching Torah and spreading Torah to the best of his ability and learning Torah as much as he can, made sure to make time to be Mevaker Cholem also. And he had nothing wrong with taking off of his schedule. I'm sure it was a busy one if he had 24,000 students to worry about. I'm sure Rabbi Akiva understood the consequence of his taking time away to go and be involved in this chesed, but that is what Rabbi Akiva was all about. This is what it means to be a great leader of the Jewish people, and this is why he was so effective. So the Gemara tells us he has 24,000 students. Bekulam meisu beperek echad, says the Gemara back to the story. All of these 24,000 students died in one specific period of the year. Why was that, says the Gemara? Mipnei shelo nahagu kavod ze lazeh. Because there was something deficient in the way that they dealt with each other. Now many have wondered, how is it possible that the students of Rabbi Kiva, who says, Zeh klal gadol b'Torah ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha, Rabbi Kiva's whole life, I would assume he got up every day in the Beis Medrash and he made an announcement, before we start learning, I want everyone to know, the most important principle is ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So if Rabbi Kiva is saying this every single day, how is it possible that his students are the ones, shelo nagu kavod zeh lazeh? It sounds like something that is very strange. It sounds like something very unusual. If Rabbi Kiva was the one who trumpeted this idea that we have to be thinking about each other and we always have to be caring for one another. So my father has said over on many occasions, I don't remember exactly who he quotes it from, and it's probably not the simple pshat in the Gemara. Not probably, it isn't the simple pshat in the Gemara, but my father says it over every year just because it's interesting. I think he quotes it from Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius, but I don't remember exactly. So my father says over that perhaps the interpretation of this Gemara is that really there was a Roman pogrom, and they wiped out the entire repertoire of Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva. It was not at all their fault. There was a massacre. And the Gemara couldn't write the story the way it was really unfolding in history, because the Romans would have made another pogrom had they seen the story recorded. So they wanted to figure out, what can we write as a code word that everybody will instinctively know when they read the story that it just can't be? So we're going to write the most unlikely possibility. Shelo nagu kavod zeh lazeh. And you're going to read the story and say, are you crazy? Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim were lo nagu kavod zeh lazeh. Everybody's going to know right away when they read the story, this cannot be what really happened. Okay, I don't know. That's one insight into the story. I don't know if it's the real pshat. I don't know if it's just a joke. But the simple understanding of the Gemara is that that's not really what happened. The simple understanding is that there was some deficiency in the way the Jewish people treated each other. And as a result, the entire community of Rabbi Kiva, which was the entire leadership of the Jewish people at the time, were totally wiped out in a very small period of time. V'haya ha'olam shamim, says the Gemara. The world was empty. The world was left desolate as a result of this loss. Achabar Rabbi Kiva, Eitzel Rabbi Seinu Shabadaram, until Rabbi Kiva came to another five scholars out in the south of Eretz Yisrael, Vishana Lahem. Imagine, Rabbi Kiva picked up and he just started all over again. He lost everything he had. And he goes to these five students, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, Veheim Heim Tehamidu Torah Osashah. And they were the ones who were responsible for the entirety of Torah being resurrected in that generation. And not only in that generation, all of Torah Shebaal Peh that we have today is from these five students. That's what the Gemara tells us, which is an amazing and an unbelievable thing to consider. You have 24,000 students, nothing is mentioned from any of them in all of Shas. But the entirety of Torah Shebaal Peh that we have today is from these five students that Rabbi Kiva started over with. So this is really what the Gemara says. And the Gemara ends off and says, V'kula meisu mi Pesach ve'ad Atzeres. In which period in history was it? I'm sorry, in which period in the year was this terrible tragedy? Says the Gemara, it was in the time between Pesach and Shavuos. Okay, so based on that, this is where the minhag has developed, as the Gaonim tell us, and this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that during this time of year, we should not be engaged in weddings, we should not be celebrating, because we should be in a sense of mourning over the fact that so much was lost at the time of the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva passing away. If we can just digress for a minute before going on to the halacha, I think the fact that we mourn over the loss of the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva teaches us something very significant and very important. And that is, you'll say to yourself, so 24,000 students passed away. This was a story from a long time ago, but we seem to be doing pretty okay without them. Life seemed to have moved on, and Rabbi Kiva had five new students, and they built the entire complex of Torah Shebaal Peh as we know it today. So why was it such a problem and why is it something that is significant to mourn today? And I think the reason why you have to consider that is because one has to understand that when we have the loss of life, regardless of how long ago it may have been, when there is the loss of life, when there is a tragedy, one has to understand that that means that our world as we know it is deficient. Because each individual has the opportunity to do something in this world that is only their tafkid, that is only able to be done by them. And therefore we think about the fact that the Gemara says, "Vahaya ha'olam shamein," the world was desolate, the world was empty. How can you say such a statement that the world was empty when these 24,000 students passed away? There were plenty of wonderful people who were still alive. There were plenty of leaders of the Jewish people who were still alive. Rabbi Akiva had friends. He had other individuals who weren't his students who did not die. So why does the Gemara say, "Bahaya ha'olam shamein"? And the answer is because without the mission and without the purpose of those 24,000 people being able to be fulfilled, the world is now an empty place. And it's going to be an empty place forever. And I think that's something powerful to think about. Whenever we experience the loss of life, you know, in this community we have announcements about, unfortunately, levayas all the time, and we don't think about it so often, and we don't consider what it means. I was very shaken up last night. I don't know if people attended this program that they had in Beth Shalom, but it was very moving. It was very moving to think about just the story in itself, a young couple who perished in such a tragic way. But leaving that aside, obviously, as tragic as that is and as horrific as it is, but to think about the stories about 20-year-olds, such amazing stories, and the potential that such young people would have had in life had they only been able to contribute all of the wonderful things that they would have been able to do, it's inspiring. And it's frightening when you think about the loss of potential upon such a terrible tragedy that we experience. My father has written in the name of Rav Soloveitchik that we have an obligation in life to be like the Ribono Shel Olam, v'halachta bedrachav. We are supposed to walk in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that has many different ways in which it manifests itself in our lives. What does it mean you're supposed to walk in the ways of God? What does it mean you should emulate Him? So it means many different things. But one of the comments that Rav Soloveitchik made is, we say every day in our davening, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Rav Soloveitchik suggested that he thinks it is a mistake the way this pasuk is translated. When we say Hashem Echad, what does it mean God is one? He said it doesn't mean God is numerically one. We know that we don't believe in the Trinity. That's axiomatic to what it means to be a Jew. So we don't proclaim every day, we don't declare Hashem Echad, that God is one. We know that God is one. What we mean when we say that God is one is that God is unique, that God is different, that God, there is nothing that can compare to the experience of having a relationship with God. That's what it means, Hashem Echad. Rav Soloveitchik said that there were people who were opposed to the practice that many of us have on Pesach night to say the song Echad Mi Yodea, because he said it's a mistake. We say 1, 2, 3 like it's a numerical value. He said when we say Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim Uvaaretz, it's not correct. That's not what we mean when we say we have one God. Of course we believe in one God. We don't have to express that to each other. We don't have to remind ourselves of that. We all know that as an axiom of our faith. What it means when we say Hashem Echad is that God is unique, that God is an individual, that God is special, and there is nothing in the world that can compare to Him. And Rav Soloveitchik said, in that regard, we have an obligation to be like the Ribono Shel Olam as well. We have an obligation to emulate His way of life as well, and that is to show how unique we are, and to make something in life that will be our mission that cannot be someone else's mission. Let's see what Rav Soloveitchik says. We have an obligation in this regard as well to be like the Ribono Shel Olam. Demahu af ata. Just like God acts in a certain way, we have an obligation to do the very same. Dehalo kal adam nivra b'tzelem elokim. Ulefikach, and therefore mechuyev kal adam lefateach es kishro nosa. We have an obligation to maximize and to develop our own kisharon, our own ability. Hamiyuchadot asher lo, those that are unique to ourselves. And we all know that we have a contribution that we can make, and that is part of our duty of being like the Ribono Shel Olam. Velihilos miyuchad, and to be unique, and to be special, and to do something in the world that is going to make a difference to the way we lead our lives. Rav Soloveitchik writes this once again in the Sefer Divrei Hashkafa. He says, when I was a young child, I had the great fortune. I lived in a house that had great people passing through it. And I was able to be exposed to all the great minds of the generation. And he said, That was a great privilege for me. Gedolei Yisrael Rabin, because of my grandparents and because of my parents and who they were, I was able to meet so many incredible people. Bein Shonim Hayu Bidarke Avodasam Esabori, but he says each one had their own way in figuring out how they would relate to the Ribono Shel Olam. Rav Soloveitchik suggested this is why we refer to it on Yom Kippur. We don't refer to it as Yom HaKippur, we refer to it as Yom HaKippurim. Why? Because there's not one method in a way that one can do tshuva and come back to the relationship with God. It's in the plural. Every individual has the opportunity to relate with God in their own way. And therefore we refer to that very sacred and holy day of the year as Yom HaKippurim. This is the day in which we have so many different ways of expressing ourselves, and all of them are valid. All of them are acceptable because all of us have an opportunity to do in our own way a repair in our relationship with God Himself. We know the Gemara says when we lose a Talmud Chacham, so it says when a Talmud Chacham leaves a city, when a great person passes away, so the Gemara says that we learn from Yaakov Avinu, Panahodo, Rashi quotes it on Chumash, Panahodo, Panazivo, Panahadaro, means that that individual's contribution that could have been invested into this community is no longer a possibility. So the Gemara says, based on the Pasuk, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava Vayelech Harana, so it says that Yaakov Avinu left, and then it says that he went. So what does it mean, he left and he went? So the Gemara says it means that when Yitzias Tzadik Ose Roshim, number Gimel, it says when a Tzadik leaves a city, it makes an impression, it makes an impact. Kishat Tzadik Ba'ir, when you have a great person in the city, Hu Hadara, he is the splendor of the city. He is the reason why the city is the way it is. Panahat Tzadik Ba'ir, once the great person leaves the city and is no longer there, Panasiva, Panahadara, there is no longer the opportunity for that great shine, for that great influence of the person to be felt in the city. And says Rashi, quoting the Medrash, V'chein Nemar b'na'ami v'rus she'yatza mimoav. And Rashi says, we learn the same thing from what we will read on Shavuos, the story of Naomi and Rus, that we're told they left the community of Moab, and they traveled toward Eretz Yisrael. And from there, once again, the Medrash teaches us that when a tzaddik or a tzaddikas, when a wonderful person, when a great influence leaves a community, we no longer are going to be the same. Now, the question that I was once thinking about is, why do we need to learn this both from Yaakov Avinu, as well as from Rus and Naomi? It's the same lesson. Normally, once the Pasuk teaches us an idea, we don't need to be taught it from somewhere else. So why does the Pasuk in Rus have to go out of its way to teach us once again that when a person leaves a city, it makes a big impression? And I think the answer is as follows. If you think about the context, the backdrop of Rus and Naomi, which community were they leaving from? Not the Jewish community. They left the community of Moab. Everybody was living a life that was not at all based on Torah principles. And what we learn from that is that you have to understand when a Jew lives in a society like that as well, we can live in the horrible place called America. Yes, it is a decadent society and we all know it to be true. But we live here and we have the opportunity while living here to make an influence and to make a difference in the community that we live in, regardless of how low the ethical and moral values and standards might be. And when we leave a community like this, when we take leave from all of this immorality that we see around us and all of this horrible lifestyle that is around all of us here in Chutz Laaretz, here in America, we understand that the community will not be the same, which means we all have the possibility to influence our surroundings. And I was very taken that last night, one of the speakers mentioned the very same idea, that we have the opportunity to influence those who might not even be our own. So they said last night a story which I was extremely moved by. They said that this Kala who passed away, Elisheva Kaplan, that her boss came to be Menachem Avel, and he told the parents that he had his business for almost 40 years, 37 years, and he had many non-Jewish workers. And he said, we all know that sometimes people speak profanity and people speak in a certain way, but he said every time Elisheva used to walk into the office, these workers told the boss that they felt they could not speak in the same way that they normally would otherwise have. I was very moved by that story. It's not because she gave them mussar, it's not because she said anything. It's because you make an impact, you make an impression. If you exude a certain kind of way of life, people will respect that. And people understand that there's a way that they have to behave in your presence. And I think that's the first lesson that we learn from Rus and Naomi. When a tzaddik or a tzaddika is when a person of influence leaves a city, leaves a community, leaves an environment, it is no longer going to be the same. That's what we learned from Rus. And it doesn't matter that you were hanging around with the people of Moab who may have been low lives with or without you. But when you leave, understand that there's a major void that is going to be felt because you are no longer there. That is lesson number one. Lesson number two that we learn is from Yaakov Avinu, and that is, even if you're living in the home of Yitzchak Avinu and Rivka, and you come from the influence of Avram Avinu, and you have the most unbelievable people surrounding your tent, surrounding your home, understand that when one person leaves even that environment, it is also going to change. It is also not going to be the same. Even though you're leaving Yitzchak behind, and you can say the job is good enough without him, it is not good enough without him. Because each individual has the ability to make a positive impact, to make a positive influence, and never say to yourself, well, there are so many other people doing it, what do they need me for? Each and every one of us has the ability to make a difference in a profound way. And never to turn around and say that it's someone else's job, and it's someone else who can accomplish it, and therefore I'm too little, I'm too small, I'm too young, there's nothing that I can do. That is not the way that a Jew lives life. The way we live life is always seeing opportunity and always understanding that we have the opportunity to influence others and to make the world a little bit more of a positive place than it was before. And I think that is what we learn from the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva as well. The Gemara says, "Vahaya ha'olam shamem." Why was the world desolate? There were plenty of God-fearing Jews who were still alive, plenty of people who were still keeping Shabbos and eating kosher and doing everything else that a good religious Jew is supposed to do, but it makes no difference. When you lose a personality who is a person of influence, who is a person of mission, that makes your world an empty place. Because the void has to be felt. Because one has to understand that that's the experience that we go through whenever we experience loss in life. So that, I think, is just a thought, number one, that we can think about as we read the story and we appreciate what exactly it means to go through the loss of 24,000 students of Rabbi Kiva. Now let's get back to the halacha of Lag BaOmer. Let's try to understand exactly what happened. The Gemara seems to say, as we mentioned, that this story of the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva happened between Pesach and Shavuos, which should have meant that we should observe the entire duration between Pesach and Shavuos as a time of mourning, as a time of reflection, as a time of thinking about what happened so many generations ago. However, the Rishonim say that they have some sort of tradition that the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva only passed away until Lag BaOmer. It's not what the Gemara says, but that's a tradition that the Rishonim had. And based on that, the Torah writes that we have a practice that there are some who stop observing Avelus already at Lag BaOmer because we assume no longer is there an obligation to be in mourning, no longer do we have to think about the death of the students of Rabbi Kiva because they no longer died. That's what the understanding is. Now, we still don't find that this became a day of celebration. The Rishonim have not yet said that. The Rishonim just said, we assume that on the 33rd day, they no longer died. The Meiri writes on that Gemara Maseches Yevamos, that not only did they stop dying, but as a result of their stopping to die, therefore Yesh Nagu, he says, some have the practice, lo lehis anos, velo lomar tachanun. He says, not just that we no longer have to observe Avelus. No longer is it a restrictive time for us, but also he says, we don't say Tachanun. And he says, we don't fast on Lag BaOmer, which means that it now has turned into a day of celebration. Now, how did that happen? Also very unusual and very unclear exactly how that morphed into it. And the Maharil, a little bit later on in the days of the Rishonim, writes that not only do we not say Tachanun, not only do we not fast, but he says, Yesh Nogim L'smach B'yomze. Some also have the idea that they should celebrate on this day. Let's look at what the Shulchan Aruch says in number Dalit. Nogim Shalo Lisa Isha Ben Pesach La'atzeres Ad Lag BaOmer. We have the practice that nobody gets married from the beginning, from Pesach until Lag BaOmer. Nowadays, for some reason, our communities do whatever they want. Everybody's making weddings all the time. But that generally was not the practice. It used to be, my father told me when he was growing up, it's not so long ago, it used to be, or for me it was a long time ago, so it used to be that everybody observed the same half of Svira until Lag BaOmer. It was unheard of that somebody would make a simcha, that somebody would make a wedding. So Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the question, well, what if somebody makes a wedding while they're not observing Avelis and I am, so what should I do? So Rav Moshe has his tshuva lahakil where he says, well, why should the Chasan and Kala lose out? This is a new phenomenon. This is not the way it used to be. It used to be that everybody observed the same half of Svira and that was it. So the question is really a new one because this is really a new practice that we find over the last 50 years or so. So the Shulchan Aruch says, why do we make sure not to have any weddings or celebrations until Lag BaOmer? Because at that time, the students of Rabbi Kiva passed away. However, the Shulchan Aruch says, Aval la'aris u'lekadish muter. A couple should not refrain from getting engaged. Why? You know why? The Gemara says, not to change their mind. You know what the Gemara says? Shema yikadmenu acher berachamim. Try to understand those words. You know what it means? We have a couple who's dating already 6 months, 8 months. They really love each other. They really want to get engaged. Okay? Says the Gemara, you better be careful. Why? Shema yikadmenu acher berachamim. You know what that means? Maybe somebody else is going to daven with kavana because they wanted that girl. And you're going to lose your chance. If you don't seal the deal, you never know what could happen. Says the Gemara, even at a time of Avelus, you're always allowed to be involved in an engagement because Shema yikadmenu acher berachamim. It doesn't say maybe something's going to happen and then you get in a fight and then you're going to break off the shidduch. It says maybe one of your friends is going to really want to marry that girl and they're going to daven and God's going to listen to their prayers. It's an amazing comment that the Gemara makes. Well, says the Shulchan Aruch, therefore, we are allowed to get engaged, you're allowed to get married during the days of Svir. V'chei nogim shelo lehistaper, we don't get haircuts on Lag BaOmer, because we assume that then the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva no longer were passing away. Now you'll ask, there was no one else to pass away anymore, they all died, so what are we so excited about? Right? So that's a question that the Vilna Gaon raises. What are you so happy about? You say they stopped dying, well, if everybody was wiped out, there was no one else left to die. So that's an interesting question to consider. I don't know exactly what the answer to that is, but I think it's a good question. Now, until this point, we still don't know anything about Reb Shimon ben Yochai. I'm sure many of us have heard, Lag BaOmer, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, Meiron. Until the days of the Shulchan Aruch, you still hear nothing about the mention of Reb Shimon ben Yochai and how he's connected some way to Lag BaOmer. I find that very interesting. I find it interesting because you have people flying to Eretz Yisrael to go celebrate Meiron of Shimon Yochai, and it's crazy what goes on there. Big celebration, and until the days of the Shulchan Aruch, nobody ever heard of this. This was unheard of, that Reb Shimon Yochai had any connection. Where does this come from? Well, it comes around the days of the writing of the Shulchan Aruch. There was another towering figure by the name of the Arizal. The Arizal was born in 1534. You know when he passed away? Do you know how old the Arizal was? 38 years old. 37, 38 years old. Unbelievable. Who in this Orthodox world since the 1500s has not heard of the Arizal? 38 years old. That's all. Amazing what a man could accomplish in 38 years. So says the Arizal, in the name of the Mekubalim, that there seems to be some connection between Reb Shimon ben Yochai and Lag BaOmer. Let's read the story. It's an unbelievable story. I don't know what to make of it, but it's an amazing story. And this was written in the Sefer Shar HaKavanos, which was written by a student of the Arizal. So he says the following. Look at number Hey. Inyan minag shenagu Yisrael aleches b'yom Lag BaOmer al kivrei harashbi v'Rabbi Elazar beno. He says, you know, there's this practice in the 1500s that we go and we visit the grave of Reb Shimon Yochai in Meiron. Asher kivurim b'ir Meiron kanoda. As we all know, they're buried in Meiron. Va'ochlim v'shosim v'smeichem sham. Everybody makes a big party there and they celebrate. Ani ra'isi l'mori. He says, I saw my Rebbe, the Arizal, shehalach l'sham pamachas b'yom Lag BaOmer. That he once made a trip up to Meiron on Lag BaOmer. Hu v'cholan shebeso. Now, it wasn't such a big trip. He lived in Sfat. Right? So it wasn't such a big trip. But he says, he went out of his way to go visit Meiron on Lag BaOmer. And he stayed there for 3 days. He was celebrating, partying around the day of Lag BaOmer. Harav Rabbi Yonasan Shagish Heili, he said, one of my contemporaries, one of my friends, who was also a student of the Arizal, told me, Shebishana HaRishona, that on that first year, Kodem shehalachti ani atzlo lilmod emori, before I got there, he said they were there for 3 days, but before I got there, shaholach has beno akatan sham, that he brought his young child, umkalan shebeso, visham gilchu es rosho, they made an upsharon for his son. Kaminig hayadua v'asa sham yom mishta v'simcha. So all of a sudden, the students of the Arizal are telling us that there's some connection to Rav Shimon ben Yochai, and therefore you should go visit Meiron. Plus, they're telling us there's some idea of making an upsharon, of cutting the hair on that day. As we know, many in Eretz Yisrael have that practice. Gam heyed Rav Avram HaLevi. He said, another one of my friends told me the following story. Listen to this, it gets a little crazy. Kibishana on his keras. On that 1 year when the Arizal went, halach gam husham. This Rav Avram was there as well. Try to internalize what he says. You know, once a year we say a special paragraph in Shmona Esrei on Tisha B'Av. What is that? We added Nachem into Shema Koleinu. What is Nachem about? Nachem is about feeling the Avelus. Habzuya v'hashomema v'hashvela. We talk about how bereft we are because we don't have a Beis Hamikdash, how lost we are in this world, and how upset we are, how depressing it is to live a life without a Beis Hamikdash, without the Shechina. We say it once a year. One of the students of the Arizal used to say this every day of his life. He felt the acute pain of the Churban Beis Hamikdash every day of his life. You know, I was amazed. Anybody was here this Shabbos when we had the speaker in the main shul? I invited someone to speak this week who lives on Ma'alei HaZeitim. Were you here? How amazing. And you know what was amazing? I told him after Shabbos. Okay, does he speak well? Does he not speak well? I don't know. He's not amazing, right? You know what's amazing? That everybody was squirming listening to him. You know why? Because he made everybody feel uncomfortable. He said, you talk about a geula, you daven every day, you don't care. He said, and he called us all out, and he's right. How many people in this room, 2 weeks before Pesach, went to buy a Karban Pesach just in case we have a Beis Hamikdash? You can laugh. But him and his family, and many others in his community, go out 2 weeks before Pesach and buy a sheep. And he's not crazy, I know this man. He goes out to buy a sheep, and he has a check to make sure it doesn't have any blemishes, that it would actually be worthy of being brought onto the Mizbeach, should the Beis Hamikdash be built. What would all of us do if the Beis Hamikdash was built 2 days before Pesach? We would all be stuck, and he would have the last laugh. And the answer is, we don't really care about a geula. We don't really think about it. That's what I loved about his talk. That he made everyone uncomfortable, and we should be uncomfortable, because we don't really care about the Churban. We're not really bothered by it. That's the bottom line. These people are living the geula process. These people are living, you know, his 10-year-old daughter knows more about the laws of Tumah and Tahara that are going to be relevant than any rabbi in America, probably. That's what he said, and he's probably right. And it's amazing. How many of us would know what to do when the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt in terms of where we're allowed to go and who we're allowed to touch and what bed we're allowed to sleep on and who we're allowed to be in the same room as? Anybody ever thought about this? And I'm amazed that he's sitting and teaching his children about these halachas that are going to be relevant because he believes they're really going to be relevant. He believes that they're a real part of his life because the Beis Hamikdash really might be rebuilt today. I don't think most of us think that way. And I think most people were squirming and uncomfortable and laughing when he was speaking. And I think he did his job. That's what we asked him to do. To make us uncomfortable. We should be uncomfortable. I thought it was a very powerful talk. Whether or not he spoke well is a different story. But I think the fact that he was able to give over these messages is a very powerful point. So he writes a story here. One of the Talmidim of the Arizal used to say Nachem every day. You know why? Because he believed that he was really at a loss for a Beis Hamikdash. He understood that life is not the way it should be because we don't have a Beis Hamikdash. Well, he writes as follows. Hayanoig lomar b'chol yom b'birchas tishkon. He would say every day in the bracha of the Yerushalayim Yircha. Nachem Hashem Elokeinu es avei leitzion. Gam b'yosho sham amar Nachem. And on that occasion, when he goes up to Meiron on Lag B'Omer with the Arizal, he also says the prayer of Nachem because he's feeling the Churban, because he's depressed. V'achar shegamar ha'amida, he finishes his Shmona Esrei, he takes his 3 steps back. Amar le'marizal. The Arizal turns to him and he says, hey, what did you just do? He says, what's the problem? I daven Shmona Esrei. He says, "Rabbi Hakitzas Reb Shimon Ben Yochai Alav Hashalom." The Arizal says, "Reb Shimon Ben Yochai woke up, and he appeared to me. Omed al Kivro, and he was standing on top of his grave. Va'amarlo, and he said, 'Amor ala isha ze Avram Halevi, tell your student Avram over there who's davening Shmona Esrei, lama haya Omer nachem biyom simchasenu? How dare he say that depressing prayer on this day of celebration on Lag BaOmer? I understand he's upset about the Churban, but today is a day of Simcha. Today is a day of celebration. He's saying a prayer, Nachem, Hashem should give us a Nechama, Hashem should give us the comfort. He says he'll have a reason to need comfort in the near future. And the story goes, a horrible ending to the story. Vikasavti calls it, writes Reb Chaim Vital, why am I saying this? Sounds like a really wild story. Lahoros, it is to teach everyone, ki yesharish b'minig hazeh hanizkar. Reb Shimon ben Yochai himself, he writes, told us that there's a reason to celebrate on Lag BaOmer. Don't be so skeptical. Lag BaOmer is a day of simcha. U'befrat ki Reb Shimon ben Yochai hu mechamisha talmidei v'gdolim shel Reb Akiva. After all, Reb Shimon ben Yochai was one of those five students that rebuilt Torah after all the students of Rabbi Kiva passed away. And therefore says Reb Chaim Vital that his Rebbe, the Arizal, taught them that there is some connection on Lag BaOmer to the death of Reb Shimon ben Yochai as well. Now, the story developed even further. Around 100 years after the death of Reb Chaim Vital, the story develops further and they say, not only did Reb Shimon ben Yochai have a connection to Lag BaOmer because he was one of the students of Rabbi Kiva and they rebuilt Torah on that day, but also because Reb Shimon Yochai passed away on Lag BaOmer. That's what the assumption was. Now, it's not clear exactly where that came from, not clear exactly what the source of that idea is really from, but really this was not something that was known until the 1600s. That's when this idea came into fruition. So you look at Rabbi Yonah ben Eibishitz. In the 1600s, he writes in a Sefer Yaros Devash, Yom Lag BaOmer Yom Hilula der Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Yom Hilula means a day of celebration. Why do we call a yahrzeit a day of celebration? You ever heard somebody say Yom de Hilula? Because we assume in heaven there's a day of celebration on the day that the person passes away, because God is very excited to have the person back with him. That's why we refer to that as a Yom de Hilula, a day of celebration. It's sad for us down below, but it's a Yom de Hilula, it's a day of celebration in God's heavenly abode. So he says, Rabbi Yonah ben Eibishitz, 1600s, that the Yom de Hilula of Reb Shimon ben Yochai is on Lag BaOmer. The day that Reb Shimon ben Yochai passed away is on Lag BaOmer. Bahaya lamala b'shamayim Hilula. There was a very great celebration in heaven because Hanara bar lamelech, because the beloved of God finally was reunited with the one he always wanted to be with. B'roi l'chalish hayarei v'hachare lasum talibo yom hahu lasha b'tshuva. This is a day in which we should think about tshuva kizchus Reb Shimon ben Yochai misayez lahabal taher. Because Reb Shimon ben Yochai will help you to return to God on that day. You want to do something special for Reb Shimon ben Yochai? Don't act wild on Lag BaOmer. That's not the way to show him how much we appreciate his contribution to this world. Says Reb Yonah ben Eibishitz, you want to make something special out of the day? You want to commemorate the great legacy of Reb Shimon ben Yochai? So do tshuva on that day. Do something unusual. Do something special. And spend the day in a way that is meaningful. And this is something that was once again mentioned by the great Balatanya in the 1700s. I didn't put it on here, but he says, Sisu v'simchu ba'Hashem mechalei v'nefesh, we should celebrate, we should rejoice on this day. Lasus yom mishte v'simcha b'chayiyar haba aleinu l'tova yoma dehilula derashbi. We should spend this day celebrating. How do we translate our celebration? What exactly does it mean that we should celebrate? He says, La Halel Uleranein Bishiros Vitishbachos La Hashem Misefer Tehilim Kigon Tehila de David Achloba Holulus Vishichrus Chas Vishalom. He says to take Lag BaOmer and make it into a day where we get drunk and we're fighting who's going to get on the buses and people are getting hurt and there are accidents and everybody's doing crazy things. That is not the way to show our appreciation to Reb Shimon ben Yochai. And burning down buildings and houses and whatever we're doing, that is not the way to show Reb Shimon ben Yochai that we honor his legacy. Says the Balatanya, you want to do something special for Reb Shimon ben Yochai? Spend the day singing Shiras V'Tishbachos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Spend the day reconnecting with Him. And this is something that was written over and over again by many since the 1600s, that we assume that on the day of Lag BaOmer was the day in which Rav Shimon ben Yochai passed away. The Bnei Yisachar took it a step further and he said, well, if you assume that Rav Shimon ben Yochai passed away on Lag BaOmer, we also assume that he was born on Lag BaOmer. So this story, I find, is so interesting because it seems that every 100 years, somebody else added another piece to the story. Where all of this came from is not exactly clear. However, there was a lot of pushback to this celebration of Lag BaOmer. After all, it is not really recorded clearly in the Sifrei HaHalacha, and this was a major controversy. Some say that some of the ideas of Lag BaOmer and the celebration came from a Talmud of Shabtai Tzvi, and it didn't really have a credible source outside of that, and therefore everybody was basing themselves on an impure source, and really it's not to be relied upon. And the Chasam Sofer was one of the great Gedolim in the end of the 1700s, beginning of the 1800s. He really was very upset by the whole celebration of Lag BaOmer. And you look at what he writes here in number Zion. Likvo moed shalom nasabo nes. He says, you're telling me that you're going to make a day of celebration that's now going to be eternalized on the calendar by Jews all over the world. And it's a day where nothing happened. It's a day where there was no great miracle. It's not like Hanukkah. It's not like Purim. It's not like Pesach. So how did Lag BaOmer become Lag BaOmer? Why are we celebrating? We don't find any mention of it in Shas or the early Achronim anywhere. Nobody mentions anything about this. All we find is that we shouldn't have a spedim on Lag BaOmer because, okay, it's the day that everybody stopped dying. Okay. But he says, to make this into a day of celebration, you're going to go make fires, and to say, oh, it has to be in Meiron, like Aliyah LeRegel, everybody has to go to a certain place, that's the only way you can be Mekayim Lag BaOmer, he says, I don't know that we have a right to institute a day in the calendar that is so specific, with all the rules of exactly how you do it and where you need to celebrate. He says, if you look later on in what he says, he writes, maybe it's a problem of Baal Tosef. It's like we're adding a day onto the calendar that doesn't exist. We're adding a day of celebration that really the Torah never instructed us to keep. So he was very wary of this idea. And even if you assume that this was the yard site of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, you look in the Shaul HaMeshiv, was one of the great Gedolim in the 1800s. Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzin, a very prolific author, he writes the following as well. He also had some reservations about the whole celebration that we have on Lag BaOmer. Tamati, Dehare Adarabba. He says, what is this all about? When have we ever heard of such a thing, that we make a celebration on the day that somebody passed away? Hare Adarabba. What do we do? I know Sherry was involved in the Zayin Adar scene. What do we do? Zayin Adar is a day that people fast. Zayin Adar is the day that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. Zayin Adar is a day that we take very seriously. So he says, what happened here? Reb Shimon Yochai passed away, and our response is one of celebration? Who ever heard of such a thing? Many people have the practice on the day of the yard site of their parents, they fast. It's a day of tshuva. It's a day that we take with the utmost seriousness. Would it be appropriate for you to go make a big celebration and hire a big band and make big bonfires and have big parties on the day of the yard site of your parents? Totally inappropriate. Says the Shaul HaMeshiv, Tamati, I cannot understand. Hare Adarabba, but most tzaddik v'chacham yesh lehisanos. On the day that a tzaddik passes away is a day that we should take with the utmost seriousness. It should be a day of meaning. The practice is that we fast on the day of the death of a tzaddik. We made all of a sudden a celebration because Reb Shimon Yochai passed away. On the day of the death of the greatest of all men, of Moshe Rabbeinu, anu osim zayin adar b'chol shana, we fast. Im huzar kra hilula de Reb Shimon Yochai hayinu lo, shebevaday simcha lo shehalach l'menucha. It's true that Reb Shimon Yochai was happy to be reunited with God, but anachnu osanu azav la'anacha. He left the world behind, and the world was not as good of a place after he left. This is not a reason to celebrate. This is a reason to be mourning. This is a reason to be fasting, as we would respond on the day of the death of Moshe Rabbeinu or anyone else. So this is, I believe, something that is just a very fascinating discussion about where Lag BaOmer came from is not so clear. Something that seems to have developed and morphed over the last few hundred years. But it's something that today we know is celebrated. It's something that today we know has become a more popular day of celebration, even though the roots of where it comes from are not exactly clear. What I'd like to take the last couple of minutes to talk about is Rabbi Akiva himself. And as I said, Rabbi Akiva was a personality that I was always amazed by. The Medrash tells us about Avraham Avinu, that Avraham Avinu gave himself a bris milah at 99 years old. And the Medrash says, from here we learn, Sha'al Yomar HaAdam, that a person should never say, Zakein Ani Mil Hiskayer. A person should never say, it's too late for me to be a different person. A person should never go through life saying, I'm too old to change. That is not the life of a Jew. The Medrash says, look at Avraham Avinu. 99 years old, he changes his whole life. He goes into a covenant with God at 99 years old. And this is something that Rabbi Akiva was really the master of. And it's something that Rabbi Akiva taught all of us. We know that Rabbi Akiva, when he got married, the Gemara tells us, he was illiterate. Rabbi Akiva was a total ama'aretz, the Gemara says. He was a nobody. His father-in-law wrote him out of the will because he was so angry that his daughter was marrying somebody like Rabbi Akiva. But his wife saw something special in him. And his wife encouraged him and understood that he can become something tremendous and something special. And he worked at it. And Rabbi Akiva was not embarrassed at the old age of 40. It's not so old. But when you think about it, it is old to start learning Aleph Beis. And I ask you, think about the story. How many 40-year-olds do you know that wouldn't be ashamed and embarrassed to go to a little kindergarten and start learning Aleph Beis all over again? It's an amazing legacy. It's an amazing life when you think about Rabbi Akiva. And that's what his whole life was. You know, Rabbi Pelkowitz just passed away, and I had so many great memories of his life and so many great conversations that I was very taken by and very much shaped by his personality. And one of the things that I was most moved by was, I don't know if anybody was present when they had the celebration for his 95th birthday in the White Shul. And I was so honored to be there. And I was wondering before, what's he going to say? 65 years he's been in the position, he's said it all already. What can a person say after such an incredible life, after all that he built, after all that he accomplished and everything that he did, and he was such a humble man, what was he going to say? And he hadn't spoken publicly too much around that time. He wasn't so well. And I was so amazed at what he chose to speak about. Anyone remember what he spoke about? He got up and he spoke about, I will never forget, I hope I never forget. He got up and he spoke about his gratitude that he has to the community for giving him the opportunity to fail throughout his career in the rabbinate. Amazing. It was amazing. And he said that he had the most profound sense of gratitude to them for allowing him to always have another chance at trying to do it better next time. And he said on that occasion, I don't know who he was quoting from, but he said he read in a book many years ago. Now, if he said it was many years ago, it was many years ago. So the way he said it to me was, it was way before you were born. I said, are you sure it wasn't before my parents were born? So he said to me that he once read in a book that it's okay to fail in life as long as next time you make sure to fail better. And it was such a profound comment. It was such a profound insight that he made. And he taught all of us that that's what life is all about. We just celebrated this week Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni teaches us the same idea. You can live a life where you made horrible mistakes, and that's what life is all about. That's what happens. We don't always make the right choices. But one has to be strong enough to have the fortitude to make sure that when I make a mistake, I'm willing to try and revisit it. I'm willing to try to grow from it, and I'm willing to try to make sure that the next time around, I will fail better. The Mishnah, when it says in Pirkei Avos, about what the defining characteristics of a human being are, v'chalifasam begolam, it says somebody who lives a meaningless life versus somebody who lives a life of meaning, of passion. Says the Mishnah, One of the seven characteristics that are listed there are someone who is mode al ha'emes. Somebody who's willing to get up and say openly, I made a mistake. It's okay to make a mistake as long as a person is willing to say that they recognize it and that they will learn from it and that next time they have the opportunity to grow from it and to do something differently the next time around. I always thought, we refer to ourselves as Yehudim, even though not all of us come from Shevet Yehuda. So why is that, that we refer to ourselves as stemming from the Shevet of Yehuda, even though we don't? So there are many answers given, but I always thought perhaps a possibility could be, because the hallmark of the life of Yehuda was that he was able to get up and say that he was wrong. He was mode. He admitted to the fact that he made a horrible mistake and he embarrassed himself in front of the entire community, that he was about to incriminate another woman that was not deserving of death. He was about to give her the death penalty, and he said publicly and in front of everybody, I was wrong. And next time I will be more careful. And next time I will live life differently. And we all have the opportunity to live life like Yehuda. That life of second chances, that life of Pesach Sheni, that life of Rabbi Akiva, this is what we celebrate on Lag BaOmer. In my opinion, Lag BaOmer is a day to celebrate because it teaches us you can have the colossal, the catastrophic life of Rabbi Akiva. All of that loss that he went through, everything that he worked at, and you think about it, 24,000 students, you know what that means? 700 Leviyas a day! You understand what it means? 700 Leviyas a day for 33 days? Spanning the country, traveling every day, going around, your entire life's work is in the garbage. Everything you tried to build is meaningless. And he has no problem waking up the next day and saying, I'm going to find another 5 students, I'll do it again. If it was any of us, we would have said, God doesn't want me, God doesn't care about me, I'm going to fall into my depression, there's no more meaning in life, what am I supposed to be here for, what's the point of survival? And Rabbi Akiva taught all of us that is not the way we live life. We always have the opportunity to revisit the mistakes that we've made and to move forward and to say we are going to build the Jewish people once again. Yes, ha'olam hayashamem, the world was empty, the world was desolate, there was nothing left behind after all these students were perished. However, Rabbi Akiva taught us that it's never too late to revisit that mistake and to figure out how to do it again, just a little bit better. And at that age, you know how old Rabbi Akiva was? 100 years old. Give the man a break. Give the man a break. Look what he just built. Look what he spent his whole life trying to accomplish. He becomes a Baal Tshuva at 40 years old, learns the Aleph Beis, builds a whole dynasty. He has all the students who are running the entire country, who are the influential men all over the world. Give the man a break, 100 years old. Is it time for me to relax? Is it time for me to retire? Says Rabbi Akiva, that is not the way we live life. His resilience, his positive attitude, his teaching the Jewish people that we always have the opportunity to move forward and to understand that life continues to have a mission. As much as we may have lost and as painful as it is, we can never allow that to make life stop having meaning. God Himself, the Medrash tells us, on the occasion of the creation of the world, the Ribbono Shel Olam Himself was Bore Olamos Umachrivan. We're told that God created worlds and He destroyed them. Until He created the world that we know today, and He said, oh, now I like the way it came out, this is what we're going to stay with. And Rav Soloveitchik was bothered by that. We know that God can do anything that He chooses, He can do it in any way that He wants it to be fashioned. So what, He had to create things and destroy them until He got it just right? How come He couldn't get it right the first few times around? And Rav Soloveitchik said that obviously this is all meant to teach us that it is possible for a person to create an entire world and for that world to have to be destroyed. But it should never stop them from creating another world. Sometimes you look at people and you wonder, how are they going to move on? You see how much tragedy they're living through. You see how much suffering God has put them through, and you cannot understand, what meaning can life ever have for them after what they've been through? And the Ribbono Shel Olam Himself teaches us on the creation of the world, on the very first encounter that we have with Him, that He Himself was Bore Olamos Umachrivan. You can have an entire world that is built and an entire world that is destroyed time and again, not just once. God destroyed His world a number of times to teach us that it's okay for worlds to be destroyed. It is okay to make mistakes. But as long as one understands that they have still the opportunity to rebuild a world again. Yes, life is challenging, and life is sometimes tragic, and life is very often difficult. But Rabbi Kiva taught us, and this is what Lag BaOmer is all about, the tikva shel ha-Yehudi, about the hope that a Jew always has to have. You look to the life and the legacy of what Rabbi Kiva was and what he built subsequently after suffering, all of that at the age of 100 years old, and you understand that yes, Lag BaOmer is a day to celebrate because it gives all of us the opportunity to reconsider all the mistakes that we have made in our lives, and that no mistake is greater than the many mistakes that were made in previous generations. But they all moved on. They all learned from those mistakes, and they all made sure that although it's okay to fail, they all made sure that next time, at least we will all pledge to fail better. I wish everyone